Amnesty! Amnesty! Everyone, run for the border! It's amnesty! They're coming to get us! Dream Act! Dream Act! What? Amnesty! Oh, it's over for Obama. What was he thinking? Is he crazy? Welcome to your Mike Malloy Show. I'm Brad Friedman. Brad Amnesty Friedman. coming at you live from the left coast, broadcasting live from beautiful K-Talk AM 1150 for one more night. For Mike Malloy, he will be back Monday night along with Kathy, and your long national nightmare will be over. But until then, you've got me, your friendly citizen investigative blogger, journalist, troublemaker, muckraker, all-around swell fellow, and legal immigrant, Brad Friedman. No, I'm not a legal immigrant. I'm not an immigrant at all. However, the world has just come crushing down on everybody today. Why? Because Barack Obama decided to do the right thing. Isn't that nice? I think it's nice. We're going to talk about that, as you might expect, a little bit in this coming hour. I have a certain take on it, as you also might expect. Not necessarily the political take on it. Well, now let me see. Let me reword that. Not the policy take. You know, he's doing the right thing, and we don't even need to. I'm not even interested in getting into all of the right left nonsense. I've got a completely different take on it. But you know what? I'm not going to get to that right now. I'm going to get to that in a little bit, and well, we'll see what you think of it. You can give us a call tonight, 877-520-1150 will be our number all night long, 877-520-1150. I'll do my best as ever to get to as many phone calls as I can during the broadcast. You can also stop by our chat room and jump on in there and start making noise at bradblog.com. Go to the very top item at bradblog.com. Click on through. You'll find the chat room. You'll say hello to For Earth, who is there tonight. Margot is in the room. Dez, Cosmic Michael. Who else is there? Dominique Morgan. I'm pretty sure Dominique is an illegal alien. We're going to get him or her. What else? The Twitters. That's right. You can get me on the Twitters at the Brad Blog. I'd love to see you over there. Feel free to call me all the names you like, especially you bright bots. Always nice to hear from you. Coming up a little bit later in the show, I'm going to be joined. Oh, I'm very excited about this. I'm going to be joined by Rick Piltz. He is a whistleblower that I haven't spoken to in, I think, 7 years. From 89 to 2005, he was the senior associate in the Office of the Federal Climate Science Program. And in 2005, during the Bush administration, he decided to come out, blow the whistle, and let the world know that the Bush administration at the time was removing references to climate science and global warming from the White House's climate science and global warming reports. It was an amazing story, and I found out about it at the time in the New York Times, and then it seemed like nobody else was covering it. At the time, I had a weekend show way back when. I used to do like 4 hours on the weekend, and it was mostly on the internet. I think there was a couple of air stations, mostly on the internet. But I was, you know, one of the only guys. I did the first full-length interview with Rick Piltz after he came out as a whistleblower. Back then in 2005, in the darkest hours of the Bush administration, back when you weren't supposed to speak poorly of George W. Bush. By the way, to Mike Malloy's credit, that was probably about the time that I first heard Mike Malloy. And he was talking about the Bush crime family even back then. And I said, oh, my God, he said the Bush crime family. He said that on our public airwaves. I can't believe it. They're going to arrest him. So he never flinched, but the rest of the media did. And you weren't supposed to speak ill of the president. You weren't supposed to talk about these whistleblowers. And so, of course, the compliant mainstream media went along with it. And I was able to snag the first full-length interview with Rick Piltz back in 2005. And curiously, as I was going back and looking at that interview, listening to that interview, on that same day, on that very same show in June of 2005, I also interviewed a woman for the first time by the name of Cindy Sheehan. And she had just testified in Congress. Some of you may remember John Conyers' basement hearings. They wouldn't let John Conyers have a proper hearing room. So he did these hearings down in the basement on the Downing Street memos, and Cindy Sheehan, who had lost her son in Fallujah the year before, she testified. And so I brought her onto my show and interviewed her. I like to say I interviewed Cindy Sheehan before she became Cindy Sheehan. A few months later, she would head on down to Crawford, Texas, and protest George Bush and try to ask him what the noble cause was and all of that. Anyway, on that very same show, I had my interview with Rick Piltz. We'll play a little bit of that interview from 2005, and then he will be joining us live to see how things have changed. See if they've gotten any better under the Barack Obama administration. We'll find out. Also joining me in a few moments will be David Cruz will be here with me. He's the afternoon drive time host at KTalk AM 1150. It's a big day, obviously, on this whole amnesty business. And his show speaks to a lot of folks in the Hispanic community. So I'm going to get his sense of what he's hearing from his callers about what this means in the L.A. community. And then, of course, we'll talk to you guys about what it means across the country. And as I say, I have a certain take on it. Here's my take on it. The squeaky wheel, the short version of my take, the squeaky wheel gets the oil, juice. What is it? What's the saying go? Grease. There we go. The squeaky wheel gets the grease. And I think there's a lesson for you progressives out there. I think there's a lesson for you Democrats out there. We will talk about that in a little bit. What other business do I have to say? Oh, speaking of Los Angeles, if you happen to be in Los Angeles, please do come on by in Venice. Come on by to Venice to Beyond Baroque on Sunday. I'll be hosting a screening of a film called Save KLSD. Media Consolidation and Local Radio. It was about the radio station, the progressive radio station down in San Diego, which was shut down just before the 2008 election year by Clear Channel, flipped on over to, I think it was the fourth or fifth sports station in town. And this is about the fight to save KLSD at the time and the concerns about media consolidation ever since. Bree Walker, who some of you may know, she narrates the film, and I will be speaking with her. It's at Beyond Baroque this Sunday, 2 p.m. to 4 p.m. If you happen to be in town, I'd love to see you. That's 681 Venice Boulevard. I'll remind you about it from time to time throughout the show tonight. If I remember, you can get more information at saveklsd.org. Okay. Before we get into this immigration business, some news out of Wisconsin. John Lehman, where's my cheat sheet here? Here we go. John Lehman, you may recall, was the Democrat who is said to have beaten Republican incumbent Senator Van Wangard in the 21st Senate District in last week's historic Wisconsin recalls. Lehman is up by just over 800 votes or so, says the 100% unverified computer counts. I have called on the Republican, Senator Van Wangard, to call for a recount, specifically a hand count, and it seems he has taken me up on that. As of today, Wisconsin State Senator Van Wangard asked election officials for a recount in his recall race, the outcome of which will decide the majority party in the state Senate in Wisconsin. Right now, there's just 834 votes between them, or 1.2%. Now, last year during the Supreme Court race, the Republicans were very critical of Joanne Kloppenburg for asking for a recount in that Supreme Court race, even though it was tighter. I think it was less than 1% in her race. But now the Republicans have a different tune, and now recounts are just fine. Whether that recount will happen on a voting machine or on hand counted paper ballots, that's a different question, which we will learn in the days ahead. Because in Wisconsin, if you want to count ballots by hand, you have to go to court and beg them. Kind of crazy, no? Yes. So we'll keep our eyes on that. Okay, you know what? Let's do this. Let's take a quick break, then we'll come back with David Cruz. We'll have a little bit more time with him that way. This is your Mike Malloy Show. This is our last night of the week, filling in for Mike. Glad you could join us here. It's going to be a big, big show, whether you want it to be or not. Remember, our phone number is 877-520-1150. These are your public airwaves, so I'll let you use them as much as I can. But we do have a lot to talk about, including David Cruz coming up next. Brad, in for Mike Malloy. Please do stay tuned. The air is the speed of radio yesterday. There we go. We've only been filling in for Mike Malloy for about 3 years, and we finally found the Friday music, the special Friday. Way to go, Tony. We also got some punk in there for Gordon, who had requested it of Tony on Monday.
And I'm going to play more punk, too. Don't
more
worry.
More punk for... Okay.
I've been playing punk all week. I will play more just
okay.
to prove that I'll play more.
Just to prove. Well, Gordon better be listening
yeah.
because everyone in everyone else is furious about all the punk music you've been playing. So just so you know. Welcome back to the Mike Malloy Show. Brad Friedman of bradblog.com sitting in one more night for Mike Malloy. And it's a big night, of course. I'm sure you have heard the news. In case you haven't, let me just give you the three-sentence Reuters version here. About 800,000 young illegal immigrants who came to the United States as children could be spared deportation for at least 2 years under new rules announced on Friday by President Barack Obama that may appeal to Hispanic voters in an election year. This is not, quote, this is not amnesty. This is not immunity. This is not a path to citizenship. It is not a permanent fix, Obama told reporters at the White House, adding that a permanent U.S. immigration policy solution would have to come from Congress. The move comes as Obama, a Democrat, is courting the nation's, you wouldn't know it sometime, anyway, is courting the nation's fast-growing Hispanic population while trying to win re-election on November 6 against Republican Mitt Romney, who has taken a harsh stand against illegal immigration. Most U.S. illegal immigrants are Hispanics, says Reuters. Under Obama's plan, those who qualify would be allowed to live and work in the United States for 2 years, could be eligible for extensions, the Obama administration said. So basically, these are folks who came over with their parents when they were young, when they were younger than 16. If they were younger than 16 when they came over, and if they're younger than 30 now, do I have all the numbers right? Then they will be allowed to apply for a permit for 2 years. A work permit, and they can keep extending that essentially indefinitely unless a new president comes in and changes everything, because this is done by an executive order, not by legislation. Joining us to talk about this right now is the drive time host here on K-Talk AM 1150, which is where we are broadcasting from, I should say, this week. David Cruz joins us for the show. Good afternoon, sir.
Well, thank you, Brad. Thank you for having me with you.
Honored that you would be willing to stick around, because I know you've had a long day talking about this.
It's been interesting, yeah.
It's a kind of a historic day, is it not?
It is. That's why I decided to come in, because, you know, when we're witnessing history, we don't always recognize it. We don't realize it. I think today it's the start of a new discussion in America. I don't think it answers many of the questions. My listeners were all over the map today. Mixed feelings. But I think it begins to move us to a table to start to talk and think about this. Really, what are we going to do to solve what is not a political problem alone or a social problem alone? I think it's a political, social, economic issue, and it's about human beings.
And so I was going to ask, you know, what were your callers saying? But you're saying they're all over the map. Now, you have sort of a general interest show. You hit politics, not necessarily Latino, Hispanic community only, but you have a lot of Latino listeners, that community, and I'm sure they were calling in today about this.
You know, I like to call the program a community program because it starts at the curb level.
Okay.
And, you know, I really enjoy talking to the working man and woman. That's where I want to be. And what I heard today, there were some people who called in with concerns about amnesty. Some people who felt, you know, here I need a job and I can't find one. And now more people are joining the workforce. I think there is a lot of that paranoia and that concern that exists. But by and large, people were saying this is a step in the right direction, because we haven't been moving.
Right.
We have been totally standing still on this immigration discussion.
And you know what occurs to me? I'm going to talk a little bit about it later on in this hour. Glenn Greenwald wrote about this. But, you know, he pointed out that in the case of the gay community, they got a lot what they wanted. They raised hell. And a lot of people said, oh, be quiet, you know, he's your guy, wait till after the election. But they raised hell. They got rid of Defense of Marriage Act, or they stopped enforcing it. They got rid of Don't Ask, Don't Tell. And then he came out in favor of marriage equality. Similarly, the Latino community has been very loud, has not stopped their protests just because it's an election year. And what do you know? they've gotten at least something that they have been asking for a long time.
I interviewed Angelica Salas, who is the executive director of one of the largest pro-immigrant groups in America, CIRLA, based right here in Los Angeles. And her words to me were this. Earlier this week, 2 days ago, they basically called the president out and said, stop deporting people who are not criminals. And guess what? She intends to continue the pressure on the White House. And some of the Dreamers were telling me they're going to keep the pressure up so that this is not just talk and paper, but that it becomes action.
Listen, when he came in, that's what he said. He said, make me do it. And I've caught a lot of crap from Democrats out there saying, Brad, you know, you're too tough on Obama on this or that, or, you know, pointing out the fact that he, unlike George Bush, by the way, targeted U.S. citizens for assassination and actually killed them. And you ought to shut up because it's an election year, because Romney's going to be a lot worse. But I think the lesson here is no, you know, leave the politics, in a sense, to the politicians. If the Democratic Party, those guys, if that's what they want to do, play it safe, play it nice, let them do it. But I think that advocates out there, real progressives out there, need to demand what it is they want. They need to demand the right thing, and they just might get it. And I think that's maybe the lesson that that's the one that
if you
I take
don't ask, me. You surely don't get it. If I may, I'm going to be on Sunday on KFI AM 640,
okay,
6 to 8 p.m. We'll keep the discussion going.
Good. Let's
Thank
keep
you,
it
Brad.
Going. Great talking
Thank
to you, my friend.
You.
I really appreciate it. And when we come back, by the way, we're going to have a right-winger who says, this is not amnesty. You have to do something wrong for there to be amnesty. Thank you, David. David Cruz, appreciate it. And I think this right-winger is right. And I'll give you more thoughts on how progressives keep up the fight, no matter what the Democrats say. Brad, in for Mike Malloy. Gordon's happy now, all right? You happy, Gordon? Gordon wanted some punk tonight, so Tony was delivering. Welcome back to the Mike Malloy Show. Brad Friedman, your punk host here in for Mike Malloy. Brad of bradblog.com. Our phone number is 877-520-1150, 877-520-1150. A couple of points here, and then we'll move away from the politics, from the left-right politics, and I'll go into what is most interesting to me about Obama's surprise announcement today that he was going to be essentially extending the DREAM Act, sort of, by executive order, not even executive order, but instructions to the Department of Homeland Security that they should stop deporting folks who had come here with their parents when they were younger than 16 because it ain't their fault. And folks like that have been, you know, living in fear of being deported. In fact, Barack Obama has put more resources into protecting the border, has deported more folks than any other president in recent times, perhaps any other president ever. Not that he gets any credit for it, of course. He's not going to get credit for it, not from the crazy folks on the right. And they are crazy, by the way. I just got an email here from the Florida statewide Tea Party. They're having a conference call on Sunday, and one of the things that they're lying to their people about says StopFloridaVoterFraud.com. Apparently they've misspelled the word fraud, but never mind that. The first sentence, there are 180,000 non-citizens and another 50,000 dead people on the Florida voter rolls. That, of course, is a complete and utter lie. But I guess it works to fool the incurious. Or the Fox News viewers, same thing, I suppose. That's a lie. And speaking of liars and Fox News viewers, here was Congressman Alan West, speaking of crazy Tea Partiers from Florida. After the Obama's big announcement today that they would suspend all targeted deportations of young undocumented immigrants who would have been eligible under the DREAM Act, after that has touched off a firestorm in conservative circles, as Adam Peck writes at Think Progress, Fox News morning program America's Newsroom invited Congressman Alan West to share his thoughts on the announcement, and he wasted no time floating unfounded conspiracy theories and misinformation.
But let's go to the issue itself for a moment, because there are Republicans have been somewhat divided on this issue as to whether or not children who are brought in illegally by their parents, and these children, you know, have no say in the matter, should we grant them the right to work in the country legally under work permits and then potentially allow them to go through the process just like everybody else does who enters the country and wants to enter the country of pursuing citizenship?
Well, I think there's devils in the details, and that's why we should allow this to go through the legislative process through our committees. Because I can start to ask questions about what's going to happen as far as their right to vote. I mean, is this one of those backdoor opportunities to allow people before in the next 5 months to get the opportunity to vote?
Hold on. What? Is this one of those backdoor opportunities to allow people in the next 5 months to get the opportunity to vote? Is Congressman Alan West unfamiliar with the U.S. Constitution? Is he unfamiliar with the rule of law? Did he hear a different announcement in the Rose Garden today than I did? Did somehow Barack Obama wave his magic wand and make these people citizens so that they were allowed to vote? God, this guy is an idiot. So, yes, this is a voter fraud conspiracy by Barack Obama, according to Alan West.
Is this one of those backdoor opportunities to allow people before in the next 5 months to get the opportunity to vote?
No.
Will we see the Janet Napolitano and the president come out with a new edict that said, since we allowed these people to be here legally, we're now going to allow them to have the opportunity to vote?
Okay, stop again. No, Alan West. Janet Napolitano and the president, no matter what edict they wished to come out with, they cannot come out and declare these people citizens who are eligible to vote. How stupid are you, or more appropriately, how stupid do you believe your voters are? Apparently very stupid.
So how far down the rabbit hole does this go? And that's the greatest concern, is that we have something that we really don't know how the details will flesh out. We just have this basic executive order, this basic rule that's been brought up from the administration. But the American people obviously are not allowed to have any type of input through their representatives that they send to Washington, D.C.
Yeah, the representatives that they sent to Washington, D.C. have been dithering about with this for years. As year after year after year, the DREAM Act is introduced, and year after year after year, it's blocked by one form of Republican or another. All right, so let's not pretend that we haven't had a national debate about these issues. Let's not pretend that the that Barack Obama is going over the head of the legislature, over the head of Congress. Well, he is, because Congress was not doing anything about it. This, after, year after year, we've seen, I think it was in 2010, actually, maybe even later than that, more recently than that, the Senate voted 55 votes in favor of the DREAM Act, of pretty much what Barack Obama is calling for today. But it was blocked. It received a majority vote in the U.S. Senate, but it was blocked by the Republicans and their filibusters. A few years earlier, I want to say 2006, forgive me if I get this wrong, but I believe it passed the U.S. Senate, only to be stopped by the Republicans in the House. So, Congressman West, let's not pretend, as you people are wont to do, you people down in Florida who send out notes to your Tea Party people saying that there are 180,000 non-citizens on the Florida voter rolls. There aren't. Stop lying to your people. And I'm sorry if your policies, you don't feel they're popular enough that people will actually vote for you if you tell the truth. But that seems to be the problem. We don't have real debate anymore in this country. We have phony debates. And that's why, you know, this week, actually, the past several months, I'm called a shill for Barack Obama. Sometimes I'm called a shill for Mitt Romney, as I was this week. The problem is that you people on the right, you Republicans, are in a fake debate. You're in fake debates with yourself. So I have to stand out and say, you're lying. You're not telling the truth. No, there's not 180,000 non-citizens on the voter rolls down in Florida. Do the voter rolls need to be cleaned up? Yes, they always need to be cleaned up. Why? Because people die. And after they die, quite often they don't send a message about it to the election official to ask them to please remove them from the voter rolls. So yes, there are dead people on the voter rolls. And these issues do need to be dealt with in some fashion or another. But when you go out and you lie to your people and you tell them that there's 180,000 non-citizens and 50,000 dead people on the rolls, and that this is being done by, Mexicans and Democrats who are trying to steal the election, then I'm going to call you idiots out for it. If you want to have a grown-up adult discussion, get back to me. Here's someone who had an adult discussion about this very issue, and I'm going to give them credit because I'm not a partisan. I'm looking for the truth here. And the truth here was spoken today by Dr. Richard Land, a top conservative evangelical leader who came out strongly in favor of Obama's new immigration policy today, and he slammed Republicans who called this move amnesty. Why? Because it ain't amnesty. Why? Because you can't get amnesty unless you've done something wrong. And if you're 2 years old and your parents brought you here and this is the only country you've ever known, you didn't do anything wrong. Your parents might have, but you didn't. Anyway, I'm happy to see Richard Land, who was asked questions about this today, respond the way a grown-up should respond.
Wanted to sort of get your opinion again. I know you were talking about the idea of calling it amnesty, and you say it isn't amnesty because
they haven't done anything wrong. Mm. I mean, in order to get amnesty, you've got to have done something wrong. These young people are innocent. They haven't done anything wrong. To me, this is the low-lying fruit of immigration reform. This ought to be something we can all unite around. They have to have been 16 before they had to be younger than 16 when they got here. They got to be under 30. He's not granting citizenship. He's granting a pathway to legal status. He's making it so that they're protected from being deported, and they can give it on with their lives, with their education, with serving in the military, investing themselves in our nation and our nation's future. Who can be against that?
What's your reaction to people who call this amnesty?
They need a course in remedial English. It's not amnesty.
Do you have any advice for, I heard you say before.
Yeah, I would say to the Romney campaign, this is the right thing to do. You should applaud the president for doing the right thing and encourage the Congress to follow up by codifying it into law.
Good for you. That was Dr. Richard Land, top conservative evangelical leader, coming out and doing the right thing. Thank you, sir. I appreciate it. Those of you who think I'm a Romney shill, please send your Twitter notes to the Brad blog. We're going to take a quick break and come back with what I think is the most important lesson that progressives should take away from today. You're listening to Brad on the Mike Malloy Show.
Let me tell you some of the reasons people get into trouble with credit cards. A job loss or salary cut, an unexpected expense, a divorce, a business loss, or even helping a family member or friend in need. How do I know? Because I'm Howard Dvorkin, the founder of Consolidated Credit. I understand that credit card problems are not about overspending. It's about emergencies and unexpected situations. For nearly two decades, Consolidated Credit has helped over 5 million people just like you. We can reduce your interest rates and cut your payments up to 50%. There's a lot of ways to get into trouble with debt. There's only one trusted way to get out. Consolidated Credit. When credit card debt is the problem, we're the solution.
Call Consolidated Credit now. 1-800-232-6131. 1-800-232-6131. That's 1-800-232-6131.
5701 Sunrise Boulevard, Fort Lauderdale, Florida. Licensed debt management service provider, Vermont and New York banking departments, Maryland 49, Oregon DM80031.
After all, I didn't think I was going to like that song, but I kind of like it. Welcome back to the Mike Malloy Show. Brad Friedman of bradblog.com in for Mike Malloy. Coming up in the next hour, going to be joined by Rick Piltz, the former whistleblower during the Bush administration, who came out in 2005 and let the world know that the Bush administration was censoring references to global warming from science reports about global warming. I interviewed him back in 2005, and I'll play a little bit of that interview. Haven't really spoken to him since, so I'm rather looking forward to seeing how that whole whistleblowing thing went. Looking forward to that. Next hour coming up. Okay, here's the, in my opinion, Glenn Greenwald hit on what is the most important takeaway from today, from Obama's new announcement on this immigration policy today. It's called The Imperatives of Political Pressure. And I'd hoped to have Glenn in. He wasn't able to make it tonight, but we'll have him in the future. But he writes, throughout the Obama presidency, one of the most vocal and demanding factions in the Democratic Party base has been activists for gay and lesbian equality. They repeatedly protested at Obama events and even at the White House, complained loudly about Obama's broken promises, and even threatened to boycott Obama's reelection campaign by withholding donations. In light of that ongoing confrontationalism, as well as the importance of gay voters and especially gay donors to the Democratic Party, it's no surprise that their agenda has been repeatedly attended to by Obama as he engineered the successful repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell, ordered his DOJ to stop defending the constitutionality of the Defense of Marriage Act, and then finally evolved, quote-unquote, to an election year endorsement of same-sex marriage. Latino activists have been as confrontational and unwilling to fall into line as good, compliant partisan soldiers. They publicly protested Obama's record number of deportations. They complained about his immigration policies, loudly accused him of betrayal, and expressed substantial disapproval for him in the polls. Thus, 5 months before the election, we have the news today about Obama announcing that finally children of illegal immigrants who came to the U.S. will be able to obtain work permits and be safe from deportation under the new policy. Like gay voters and donors, Latinos are vital to the president's reelection bid. Had they simply stayed quiet and cheered blindly for Obama and Democrats, they would have had no leverage. Politicians rationally will reflexively ignore those who pledge unconditional fealty to them. Because their devotion to the Obama reelection campaign was not unconditional, it was very much conditioned on having their political priorities attended to rather than ignored, they have now received a valuable and important and plainly just policy change. This illustrates the proper relationship between citizens and public servants. Uncritical adoration and unconditional loyalty breed an arrogant, insular, unaccountable political class. As David Sirota argued when Obama evolved on marriage, those who reflexively defend Obama in the name of election year political loyalty or who demand that criticism be stifled until the election are the prime impediments to progress. By contrast, demands, pressure, criticism, threats to withhold support, and confrontational tactics breed a healthy respect and even self-interested fear among political leaders, along with responsiveness. This is why I argued when Obama announced his evolution on marriage equality that motives are irrelevant. What matters is what politicians do, not why they do it. And the way to make them do what you want is to demand and pressure them using every possible tactic, not to sit back and cheer and hope that they'll do it out of the goodness of their heart. Yep. Just this week, a group of undocumented immigrants has occupied, this is a news item that he adds as an update, a group of undocumented immigrants has occupied President Barack Obama's campaign office in downtown Oakland, refusing to leave until his administration stops deporting students. Quote, "We're going to stay here as long as we can," said Luis Serrano, 24, speaking by cell phone Thursday evening from inside the Telegraph Avenue storefront where he and other students were staging a sit-in. Serrano, three other illegal immigrant students, and a supporter walked into the Obama for America office on Thursday afternoon pretending to be campaign volunteers. Quote, "They said they were going to do some phone banking and donations," said activist Krishna Avila of the National Immigrant Youth Alliance, which organized the protest. Soon after arriving, however, the students plopped down and put graduation caps on their head and informed local campaign workers they would not leave until Obama changed his deportation policy. That happened just this week. So adds Glenn Greenwald, the more fear confrontational activism can put into the heart of the political class, the better. You got that? The more fear confrontational activism can put into the heart of the political class, the better. I couldn't agree more with Glenn Greenwald on this issue. And I couldn't disagree more with folks in the Democratic Party who say, oh, shut up. Things will only get worse if you point out that, you know, Barack Obama is continuing these wars, that Barack Obama is putting U.S. citizens on kill lists and assassinating them. It'll only get worse. You'll get Mitt Romney. No, what you might get is Barack Obama doing the right thing, as he has finally come around to doing, at least partially, with marriage equality, as he has now come around to doing, at least partially, on immigration issues. No, I'm not going to shut up. I'm a journalist. I talk about what's going on. I talk about right and wrong. I can let the politicians figure out everything else, figure out what's doable and what's not doable. But for those of us who give a damn about the right thing, raising holy hell and taking Barack Obama up on his, taking him for his word when he said, make me do it. Well, America, make him do it. The Tea Partiers are making their politicians do it. I hope that people who give a damn about what goes on in this country will make Barack Obama do it. Forget about election year politics. There's right and wrong. That's what I give a damn about, and that's what I'm going to keep talking about. You're listening to Brad on the Mike Malloy Show. Rick Piltz, speaking of right and wrong from the Bush administration, he'll be with us in a moment. Stay with us. Welcome back. Hour number two. That would be two of three on the Mike Malloy Show. Welcome back. This is my final night here of the week. In for Mike Malloy, the vacationing Mike Malloy. He will be back Monday, never fear. Until then, you got me, Brad Friedman of bradblog.com, your friendly citizen investigative blogger, journalist, troublemaker, muckraker, and all-around swell fellow from bradblog.com. Glad you could join us. We are, in a few minutes, we'll be joined live by Rick Piltz. He was, from 1989 to 2005, a senior associate in the office of the Federal Climate Science Program. And in 2005, he resigned from that role, coming out and he became a whistleblower, telling the world that the Bush administration had been essentially censoring, editing out references to climate change and global warming in their scientific reports. It was an extraordinary story at the time, at least to me in 2005. I believe I caught it on the in the New York Times way back then. And such was the media in the dark, dark days of the Bush administration that there was not the kind of media, frankly, that we see today. They were very compliant in the post-9/11 era. And I was able to get in touch with Rick Piltz and had him actually on the air back in 2005 in what was his first full-length on-air interview at the time. As I mentioned in the first hour, on the very day that I had him on, I also had Cindy Sheehan on before she went down and became famous down there at Crawford, Texas, trying to get a meeting with George Bush to find out what the noble cause was that her son had died for. She was on my show at the time. I had a weekend show back then. It's about a 4-hour show on Saturday. It was almost entirely just on the internets back then, as we were trying to go anywhere, do anything we could to get the word out about what the hell was going on. So I had her on that day, and I also had Rick Piltz. At the time, Rick wasn't available that afternoon, so we taped an interview that we then aired on the show in two different parts. And back then, we were so low rent, like we're not low rent now, but we were even lower rent back then, that when I interviewed him on the telephone, as you'll hear in this, I'm going to play a few minutes from this interview before we have him on. We were both on the phone. I didn't even have the proper recording equipment. So we're both on the telephone for about 5 minutes here. But this is my interview with Rick Piltz just after he had resigned from the Office of the Federal Climate Science Program. This interview originally aired June 18, 2005. We'll play a few minutes of that, and then we'll take a break and come back with Rick Piltz live to see how that whole whistleblower thing has turned out and what Rick is up to now.
The office I worked for was involved in coordinating a dozen federal agencies that support this research, you know, NASA and the National Science Foundation and the Pentagon and EPA and so forth. And so the science professionals would write these things, and they would review them and revise them among themselves in a bit what I seemed to me to be a very straightforward and professional kind of way. And then the document would have to go for a kind of a high-level White House clearance before it could be published.
And at that stage, people
whose basic job was not science, but to advance the administration's political agenda, would step in and start introducing a lot of changes in the documents, and the net effect of all of the kinds of changes that they would make and try to make in documents was to basically play down the global warming problem, divert attention from discussion of impacts of climate change. It was a kind of way of diffusing any sense of urgency about the issues, manufacturing a greater sense of scientific uncertainty than you would get from the scientists themselves.
Do you have an opinion, a speculation about why this administration would be so interested in removing the references and so forth to global warming? I mean, what is it exactly that they're after? Do you have proof of what they're after, or are you just connecting the dots, so to speak, as far as why they'd want to?
I think it's connecting the dots in that it seems to me evident in this area and in energy policy and in a number of other policy areas that this administration is very responsive to a certain type of corporate constituency, the big energy companies and so forth, and they have political allies on the Hill and in think tanks and advocacy groups that are all kind of on the same page, but they have an agenda that is responsible to their main supporters in the corporate world, it just seems to me clear that the motivation is, if you really have a forthright, honest discussion of what is coming out of the climate science research, the implications of climate change, I think that they're afraid, and rightly so, that you would have a more public pressure to consider having a stronger policy on reducing emissions of greenhouse gases. And that is something that they don't want.
Well,
it's a strategy to fend off something that might have some regulatory impact on their corporate allies, by exaggerating the sense of scientific uncertainty about the climate change problem.
Why were you not able to talk about these things without resigning? Or did you feel that you had to resign in order to be able to speak your mind on these issues?
Well, I think you'll find that there are a lot of people on the inside and certainly a lot of people in the science community who see what I'm seeing and who have it has sort of a chilling effect and I think on some people a demoralizing effect. But you can't be too much openly a dissident if you are a federal program manager. It's career limiting. And there's a concern about, you know, if you get in trouble with your boss, the White House starts getting your boss on your case. You could have trouble with your program's budget, the White House Office of Management and Budget. You find your budget might be cut. Then that undercuts your ability to support the scientific research that you're supporting. People defer to the White House. And if there are political people in the room, if there's someone sitting at the table, you know, who, you know, clearly is representing the political bias of the White House, the career professional people are going to tend to sort of back away and keep quiet and not rock the boat. And, I guess it's, I would like to see more cases of people coming forward, but I appreciate the position of the career people who understand that it would cause a big problem for them if they did.
So
my particular case, I had enough. I mean, I didn't, these issues just seemed to me to be so important, the values that were at stake, that it just seemed to me that the next thing that I should be doing is rather than kind of working quietly on the inside, trying to, you know, limit the damage and win small victories, is to just come out and just say exactly what I think and to tell what I know.
Yeah, that was 2005. That was Rick Pilz telling what he knew after leaving the Office of the Federal Climate Science Program during the Bush administration, becoming one of the very early whistleblowers, frankly, to emerge from the Bush administration. He will be joining us live. He is now the founder of ClimateScienceWatch.org. We're going to take a quick break and come back with Rick Pilz live 7 years later. See how that whole thing worked out. Brad Friedman in for Mike Malloy. Welcome back to the Mike Malloy Show. Brad Friedman in for Mike Malloy. Yeah, blinded. Actually, the Bush administration, I think, was trying to blind us from science is perhaps the better way to look at that. I'm joined before the break. You heard my interview, a bit of my interview with Rick Pilz after he became a whistleblower during the Bush administration back in 2005, when very few people, it seems to me, and we'll find out if I'm right, we're interviewing him, we're putting him on the air to make noise about what he was trying to blow the whistle on. He now joins me live 7 years later. Haven't spoken to him since then. He is, as I said, from 89 to 05. He was the senior associate in the Office of the Federal Climate Science Program, which had been in existence since 1989, serving multiple agencies in the government, in the federal government. In 2005, after resigning from the Office of Federal Climate Science, he founded ClimateScienceWatch.org in Washington, D.C. as an independent public interest watchdog project. Climate Science Watch is sponsored by the Government Accountability Project. In other words, that would be www.whistleblower.org, the nation's foremost whistleblower council and advocacy organization. Rick Pilz, welcome to the Mike Malloy Show.
Hey, Brad. It's good talking with you again.
And you. It was so interesting to go back and listen to some of that some of that interview from so long ago. What was the reaction after all of that, after that wave of publicity you got, and what was the career fallout like for you after that happened at that point?
Well, in the immediate case of the front page story coming out in the New York Times, and it, which we identified essentially an oil industry lobbyist who was the chief of staff in the White House Council on Environmental Quality, who had been really acting as the political policeman on climate change communication. He resigned within a couple of days, and then a couple of days later, he was announced that he was taking a job with ExxonMobil. So he had come out of the oil industry and went back into it.
Did he resign? Was his resignation in direct response to your resignation?
As far as we can tell. Uh-huh. And he never said anything in his own defense. The White House press secretary, Scott McClellan, got grilled quite a bit about it. So it really made a kind of a concise and elegant little narrative of the fox guarding the chicken coop. I mean, I think people could understand the problem with the Bush administration's problem with integrity on global warming without knowing very much about climate models and trace gases and polar bears and and whatnot. It was a political story, so it had a fair amount of legs in that respect. It did get some network coverage, though not on Fox, and some good follow-up. But
Rick, as long as you mention that, did Fox ever cover it at all? Did they ever?
Not to my knowledge, no.
Never mentioned it.
Not to my knowledge.
Wow. Okay.
So they bring in a new person. You know, it didn't mean that their political interference was going to stop, and it didn't mean that their policy, or lack of policy would probably be more accurate, was going to change. And it seemed to me one of the reasons I had brought the story, I finally just got out of there to talk about the story, was it seemed to me it wasn't being covered in the media. It was difficult to cover because it was so much inside, kind of inside baseball to understand and explain and try and make clear to people. And unless people on the inside would come out and tell what they were seeing, it was hard to see. So I decided that basically I needed to continue to deal with the issues that we had raised here in Washington. It's kind of an inside the D.C. Beltway project, looking at the ways climate science is misused by politicians. I mean, to put it bluntly, used, misused, abused, denied, manipulated. And so for quite a while that involved sort of throwing rocks at the Bush administration, although this is not a strictly partisan problem, and trying to get the political power elite of the country to deal with global warming and pay attention to what the scientists are telling them and deal with it effectively and with integrity turns out to be a huge problem. I mean, we have not really been able to do that yet.
So
I started this little project called Climate Science Watch to continue to be a voice on these issues.
And you have, in fact, thrown rocks at other administrations as well. I know you got arrested last year at the White House. We'll talk a little bit about that in our next segment. But just in the minute or so left we have in this segment, I know you were calling at the time for others to also step forward, other whistleblowers. And I don't know if it was referring just to the science issues or, you know, across the board inside the Bush administration. Did, in fact, other whistleblowers come out? Did they heed your call? Did you meet folks over the years who said, yeah, I came out after I saw what saw you doing exactly that?
Well, I was focused pretty much on the climate science, and the most high-profile person was James Hansen at NASA, who is probably the most eminent federal climate scientist. And the Bush administration tried to muzzle him from talking about the need to deal with global warming, and they told them to not accept certain interview requests and not post on his website without permission and to pre-clear everything. And he went to the New York Times,
mm-hmm.
and that was another front-page story, and they had to backpedal on Jim Hansen. But, you know, most scientists, they're pretty risk-averse. They don't want to be involved in political controversy. They may not be as fearless or as eminent as Hansen.
Mm-hmm.
People are they don't become whistleblowers partly because they think they won't do any good and they'll get clobbered for it their career.
Yeah, and I hear, you know, I got to get to a break here, Rick Piltz, but I hear people, you know, talking all the time, people who don't like these whistleblowers saying, oh, they're just doing it to get famous. Well, another whistleblower once told me, look, having whistleblower on your resume is not exactly the best thing. It's not, you know, going to help you get a job. But
there's
anyway.
More to be said about that.
Yeah, indeed. We will talk more about it when we come back. Speaking with Rick Piltz of ClimateScienceWatch.org. I'm Brad Friedman. This is the Mike Malloy Show. Stay with us. Yes, we are stuck in the middle with you for another couple of hours here on the Mike Malloy Show. Brad of bradblog.com. Speaking with Rick Piltz, the former whistleblower during the Bush administration, who came out and let the world know that the Bush administration was modifying their reports on climate science to hide the effects of climate change and global warming. He then went on to found the Climate Science Watch, climatesciencewatch.org. I spoke with him in 2005, and here we are 7 years later, and I think in many ways we're still fighting the same fight. And Rick Piltz, what's kind of remarkable now is that when you came out in 2005, it was shocking what the Bush administration was doing. Now, it seems this is happening all over the place. We recently saw in just the last couple of weeks down in South Carolina, I believe it was, the legislature is talking about passing a law that makes it Des, help me out here, Desi Doyen, that makes it illegal.
It was in North Carolina.
North Carolina, there we go.
And it was making it illegal to, or they were making it against the law to use the current science to determine what sea level rise was going
to
be.
So a 3 feet sea level rise has to be
only 8 inches based on the last 100
right.
years only, not on any other geological.
And Virginia is they've got a policy now that they can't talk about.
They can't use the word sea level rise in their reports of planning documents for coastal development regarding sea level
right.
rise.
Right. Now it's recurrent flooding. So Rick Piltz, I mean, what was going on in the Bush administration was sort of behind.
Precursor.
And it was behind the cloak of darkness. We're seeing this similar denialism going on now, not just at the federal level, but at the state level, and people are now proud of it and talking openly about this sort of thing.
Yeah, well, I came to call it the global warming denial machine, and I'm not talking about people who are have some kind of intellectual skepticism, as all good scientists and intellectuals do, but this was a politically orchestrated, ideologically driven, economically driven attack on climate science and even on the credibility and integrity of the climate science community, because the science was coming up with a message that clashed with their political and cultural views.
Mm-hmm.
It implied that the government needed to take proactive steps to solve a problem. And to avoid acknowledging the need for that, they misrepresented the science. Now, with the Bush administration, the early stages of that global warming denial machine went right into the administration. But you have a corporate-funded PR and policy advocacy groups, and now to the point where global warming denialism has practically taken over a large chunk of one of the major political parties. And it is almost, it became like a litmus test for Republican presidential candidates to walk away from climate science, basically, in order to satisfy their right-wing base. It's just like one of those things that you have to be politically correct on.
That was this year, but just 4 years ago, I mean, you had John McCain and Sarah Palin even both calling for cap and trade back then, which was, you know, essentially a conservative plan to deal with global warming instead of a carbon tax. It was a market-based solution that, you know, even McCain and Palin just 4 years ago were calling for. And here we are 4 years later. I mean, in many respects, what was a secret back then, sort of a secret cabal to keep down the science, the denialism was, you know, behind closed doors back then. Now it's right out there in the open, and you've got these groups like the Heartland Institute, you know, in Chicago. They have put up a billboard a couple of weeks ago comparing climate scientists to Ted Kaczynski and Charles Manson. I mean, after all that's been said and done, And thanks, frankly, to folks like you who came out and blew the whistle, it seems like things ultimately have only gotten worse, not better, to the point where folks like you and James Hansen now even had to go to the White House and protest Barack Obama, and you got arrested there, did you not, in 2011?
Well, yes, that was the sit-ins at the White House to call on President Obama to block a permit for the Keystone XL pipeline that's proposed to bring the tar sands oil from Alberta to the refineries on the Texas Gulf Coast. Now, I think with Obama, we have not had, you know, the kind of censorship of science that we had under the previous administration. But what you had is really a lack of leadership. I mean, if you won't even find climate change or global warming mentioned on the president's reelection campaign website. I mean, it's simply not there. And he doesn't mention it in the State of Union, and he's never given a single talk, really, to the public about characterizing the global warming problem and what needs to be done. You'll talk about clean energy, but somehow they've gotten scared off as though they don't trust public opinion on this, when in fact the public, the surveys show that the public would support, most of the public would support strong leadership on this issue, and people do understand that there is a problem. And we do find that the administration, the Obama administration, is sometimes willing to kind of overlook the science when it's politically inconvenient, like when they move to permit drilling offshore in the Arctic Ocean, you know, or when they don't really move aggressively to stop mountaintop removal coal mining. Well, this Keystone pipeline, if you dig up and burn all that tar sands oil that's under the ground in Canada now, you are going to, you know, really add a tremendous amount of carbon to the atmosphere. You're going to slow down or block any kind of transition to a real clean energy alternative. And the situation there was in Obama's hands. It crossed the international border. It required, you know, the State Department to give a permit, and it looked like they were just going to push it through, you know, and just hope nobody even noticed.
And it was actually, I'm fairly well convinced here that had the Republicans up in Nebraska not come out and said, well, we need to reroute that. They were looking at this pipeline threatening their drinking water up there, their aquifers.
Yeah. In the Sand Hills region. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and had not the Republican, I think it was the Republican governor up there who signed that bill, who said, no, we won't let the pipeline run this certain route. Had not he had not had the cover of the Republicans, I think that they might have gone ahead and approved it by now. But
the thing for a long time was being fought. That battle was, it was landowners in East Texas. It was a few landowners in Nebraska and. Mm-hmm. You know, the Indigenous Environmental Network up in Canada, mm-hmm. and people who were just really getting no national coverage at all. And so, well, some of us decided that, you know, it would be good to nationalize this issue and bring it to people's attention and enforce it onto the radar screen. So over a period of 2 weeks, waves of people sat down on the sidewalk outside the White House and refused to move on. And it was a civil disobedience, you know, sit-down mm-hmm. protest. And about 1,200 of us were arrested over a two-week period, you know, and mm-hmm. Put in the handcuffs and taken off in the police wagon and so forth. And finally, that did help to attract attention. The president put the permit on hold. Mm-hmm. But what happens after the election, whether he just goes ahead and approves it? It was a temporary victory for the climate movement. But it may be very temporary.
It may indeed. I'm speaking with the whistleblower, jailbird, and director of climatesciencewatch.org, Rick Piltz. Have you noticed a difference as a whistleblower? And I know all you whistleblowers get together on weekends and have your conferences and parties and discussions. Have you noticed other whistleblowers who have come out since, even under the Obama administration? How has the treatment of those folks been by the Obama administration? And how has Obama's treatment of whistleblowers differed from Bush's treatment of whistleblowers?
Well, that's an interesting question, and it's a mixed bag. You do have the people who are running the Office of Special Counsel now are more are not so much into sweeping whistleblower cases under the rug, but actually taking steps to protect the federal whistleblowers in some cases. During his campaign, Obama made statements that sounded like he appreciated the fact that whistleblowing under some circumstances can be an important part of public service and holding government officials accountable and corporations as well. But in certain areas, he has had really been very tough on whistleblowers, particularly in the national security mm-hmm. Area. One case that my sponsoring organization, the Government Accountability Project, got involved in was the case of Thomas Drake of the National Security Agency, who was just trying to bring out, fighting the battle within mm-hmm. to stop a huge boondoggle on a multi-billion-dollar contract for this security secret surveillance
right.
stuff that was going to surveil Americans, and it was there were legal violations, and it was throwing a lot of money away on an overly expensive system that never turned out to work. And when he finally gave some non-classified information to a Baltimore Sun reporter and the story came out, they threw the book at him. They destroyed his career, and they charged him with 10 felonies, and they prosecuted him under the Espionage Act.
Yeah.
He was practically the first person since Daniel Ellsberg.
Yeah.
To be prosecuted under that, and it was just, I mean, the thing ultimately was just totally dropped before it even went to trial. It was all totally bogus.
Right.
But somehow Obama appears to be in thrall to the national security surveillance state establishment. He wants to appear tough. He doesn't want to antagonize these people. And so he's being every bit as hard-nosed as the Bush administration would have been, possibly even more so, in prosecuting a whole series of national security whistleblowers. And the intention, I think, is to create a chilling effect. This is what this is a lot of what's involved. It's like, take a look, everybody, at what we're doing to this guy.
Yep.
He's finished.
Oh yeah. I mean,
he will never, and he is a traitor, This is what's going to happen to you if you don't shut up.
Yeah, and what they've done of similarly, I think, to Bradley Manning, the treatment that he has gotten.
That's right.
It is sending a very clear message, and it's kind of a scary one. All right, we got to take a quick break here. We're speaking with Rick Piltz. I know when we come back, Desi Doyen has a question for you as well. She's my producer and my co-host on the Green News Report, heard on fine progressive radio stations around the nation. And if it's not on yours, you should yell and scream and complain at your station and ask them to carry it. We'll come back with a few more minutes with Rick Piltz and some of your calls, if you like, 877-520-1150. Blowing the whistle all night long, at least for one more night before Mike returns next week. I'm Brad Friedman of bradblog.com. This is your Mike Malloy Show. Please stay tuned.
And my time was running wild, a million dead-end streets, and every time I thought I got it made, it seemed the taste was not so sweet.
Yeah.
So I turned myself.
Good choice there, Phil. If I could only wait for the changes part to come in, I'm getting lost in Bowie land. Welcome back to the Mike Malloy Show. Brad Friedman of bradblog.com in for Mike Malloy. Speaking with Rick Piltz of climatesciencewatch.org about his experience as a whistleblower during the Bush administration, who was censoring quietly science concerning climate change at the time. And now, of course, it's all the rage. Everybody's doing it, it seems. Desi Doyen, my co-host and the producer here of the show and my co-host on the Green News Report, has a question for you, Rick Piltz.
Well, actually, first, I have a statement, which is the work that Rick was working on when he resigned back in 2005 has actually been completed and put forth with a report, the U.S. Global Change Research Program. Did I get that name right, Rick?
Yes.
Okay. The U.S. Global Change Research Program, it's a consortium of 13 federal science agencies. They issued a report in 2009 that detailed the regional impacts of climate change on specific U.S. states and regions. So you can see the impacts for your area if you go to globalchange.gov. Globalchange.gov.
And Rick, did they get the science back into that report after you left?
Yes. Well, the first version of that, the National Assessment of Climate Change Impacts that came out in the 2000 timeframe, was suppressed by the Bush administration. To me, this was even worse than marking up some documents because it suppressed the whole process for putting the scientists to experts together with you know, the public and the policymakers to diagnose where we're vulnerable to climate change and how we have to deal with the impacts. And they just absolutely sent that report into a black hole. It was never discussed by the federal government after that. The Obama administration released an updated version of that in 2009 that had been worked on quietly over a period of time. And, you know, it's a legitimate support. The global warming denial machine doesn't like it.
Oh, no, of course not. But I was
actually invited, you know, back in to witness the release of that report, you know, to some place I hadn't been for quite a while since I'd resigned from the government program. So, and now they have another one. It's supposed to come out every 4 years. There's a big process underway now to produce a new national climate assessment scheduled to come out for public review at the end of this year and in final form sometime in 2013 that is going to be 30 chapters, sector by sector, region by region. What are the implications of global warming and global climatic disruption for the United States? And that is the sort of thing that should be the basis for some serious discussion by the politicians and by the public, and I'm hoping that people pay attention to it.
Yeah, one of the things that I saw in that report, again, that's at globalchange.gov, was shockingly, like the Southeast, for example, was going to go from, say, 30 days in summertime of over 90 degree temperatures to 60 or more days above 90 degree temperatures. I also have one really quick question for you, Rick, about the disconnect with the media. Obviously, polls show that there is a resilience to average Americans' understanding of climate science. So how do we get the media? What do you suggest to getting action in the media to cover this?
Well, you know, there's been so much cutback, you know, in print journalism, so much environmental and science expertise has been laid off, so much institutional memory's been lost. You know, you're really having to sort of build and rebuild some capability to discover these issues adequately. I mean, I think it's safe to say that most people could not get their arms around a problem this complicated from what they get out of the mainstream media at this point. But people will pay attention if they see that the high-level leadership is taking the problem seriously and not sweeping it under the rug. That'll help to focus people's attention. The science alone can't just do it with education. It requires both some kind of grassroots pressure on the politicians to take this up and some high-level leadership to focus the public attention on the real issues.
Once again, as we talked about last hour, make them do it.
That's right.
Rick Peltz, it's so great to catch up with you again. Hope we get to do this very soon. And thank you again, sir, for your service to this nation, what you did in 05, and what you continue to do ever since. Rick Peltz, director of climatesciencewatch.org. Thanks, Rick. Greatly appreciate it. All right, well, when we come back, your calls, 877-520-1150. Brad on the Mike Malloy Show. Welcome back to the Mike Malloy Show. Brad Friedman of BradBlog.com, broadcasting for one final hour as the sun is setting on the left coast out here in beautiful downtown Burbank and the lovely studios of K-Talk AM 1150. Breaking news, Mike Malloy will be back with you Monday, never fear. Looking for, I could hear a collective roar, a collective cheer go up across the nation. Yes, Mike will be back last few days of his vacation, so you got me for one more hour, and your public airwaves are wide open if you'd like to get in. 877-520-1150. That's 877-520-1150. I'd love to hear from you. We've got our chat room is open and lively as ever at bradblog.com. Go on over there and you'll... And follow the breadcrumbs into the chat room. You'll find it. Also, you can Twitter me at the Brad Blog. I should say also, before we go to your phones and a few more of my thoughts here, Save KLSD, Media Consolidation and Local Radio. It's a new documentary that is being screened this Sunday. If you happen to be in Los Angeles, come out and say hello. I'd love to see you. I will be speaking with the lovely and famous Bree Walker. Tony, were you talking about Airplane the other day? The movie Airplane, was that you?
Yeah.
That you love that movie? Did you know that's Bree and Jim Lampley in the opening with the whole, the red zone gym is for unloading and the loading and unloading. Remember that part?
Oh, yeah.
That's
yeah.
Bree, and did you know that was her?
I think so, because she told me.
She told you?
I
yeah.
I think so.
Right.
Yeah.
No, Bree. The white zone is for loading and not. Yeah. Anyway, so Bree will be hosting that, and I will be there and saying a few words, I'm sure. Me, have a few words, opinions about media consolidation. Yeah, I will be there. So that is at, let's see, this Sunday, Beyond Baroque, 681 Venice Boulevard in Venice at 2 p.m. Go to saveklsd.com for more details. Okay. Also, by the way, if you can't make it to the Save KLSD event, maybe you can go down to San Diego to the Koch event. Koch brothers are having their big event, their big summer seminar down in San Diego this year. Location unknown, however, at this time. The Kochs raised more than, this is from Politico today, the Kochs raised more than $150 million at their winter conference this year in Indian Wells, California, on top of $49 million at a summit at Rancho Mirage, California, earlier this year. There was one summit in between in Beaver Creek, Colorado. Some of you listeners may remember that one. I'll tell you about that in a moment. And if, and even if donors only match the lower tally at Beaver Creek, that would put the Koch network at about $250 million raised for this cycle. That means they're within striking distance of their $395 million goal. How do you like your democracy now? And it looks like they're likely to exceed it, given that sources told Politico that interest in the donor network has only increased since Democrats up to and including President Barack Obama have taken to targeting the Kochs as examples of the corrupting influence of big money in politics. But the attacks haven't bothered the Koch network donors, asserted Hubbard. Which one is Hubbard here? One of these Koch jerks, declaring, "All this nonsense over, well, they're oil people. Baloney. They will do the right thing for their country." Oh, really? They will do the right thing for themselves. The Koch brothers have made $18 billion under Barack Obama. And the thanks they get, they want to destroy him and remove him from office. Okay. At last year's summer conference, Kevin Gentry, he's the one who organizes these conferences, and he's the money man for the Koch boys. Gentry seemed to assure the donors they wouldn't catch flack for their donations. Quote, "There is anonymity that we can protect," unquote, he said in remarks that were surreptitiously recorded and leaked to Mother Jones. Some of you may remember that story. It was right around this time, I think, last year. I was working on that story. I was the one to whom those comments were leaked. I ran my story at Mother Jones, a series of stories, actually, and outing the fact that Chris Christie was the keynote speaker out there. He was too embarrassed, apparently, to let anyone know. Didn't let the local media know. Didn't let his constituents know. He secretly flew out there to give his speech and flew back. Got the full audio of that speech, by the way, at bradblog.com. I posted it when I ran that story at Mother Jones. Secrecy is the name of the game at the summits, says Politico, much like at the Democracy Alliance. Gatherings of big liberal donors. Koch donors are required to wear name tags at all times and security officers wearing gold lapel pins bearing Koch Industry K logo roamed the halls at last year's winter meeting, removing a Politico reporter under threat of arrest. This is your democracy, people. Behind doors, behind closed doors, you got security guys walking around with cake. They're so proud of the great work they're doing for this country that they're throwing reporters out. They're meeting entirely in secret. And yes, for the first time, I believe, for their summer meeting, they're going down to San Diego. Why? Because some jerk got inside recordings of their meeting in Colorado last year, and they don't want to let that mistake happen again, so they're moving to a completely different state. They used to meet every summer in Colorado. Now, oh yeah, by the way, I'm that jerk who got those recordings and released them on the internet. But because of that, they're moving to a whole nother state. What do you know? It's my state out here in San Diego. Imagine that. Hope everything goes well for them down there. What could possibly go wrong? Okay, 877-520-1150, 877-520-1150. Let's go to Dale in Columbus, Ohio. Hey, Dale, welcome to the Mike Malloy Show, sir.
Wow, the power of the internet.
Oh, yeah.
too much with the, we got to make noise. like Occupy is still going a little bit. The more noise we make, obviously, the more is going to happen. And that's the same thing with Obama. I mean, if people were screaming loud enough for the agendas they want and the progressive agendas, the Obama administration would follow up. No
problem.
Well,
and they did. And we...
not enough.
Go ahead.
Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say we I talked about this in the first hour. The gay community did not let up. They were relentless in their protesting, their advocacy, their activism. And what happened? We got rid of Don't Ask, Don't Tell. The Obama administration is no longer enforcing Defense of Marriage Act, and he came out for marriage equality. The Hispanic community came out, kept protesting relentlessly, and today we have this huge news about, he's going to stop deporting children who came to this country with their parents. And the same thing, by the way, when I was speaking with Rick Peltz in the last hour, it was when the folks were showing up at the White House for day after day, getting arrested, that then Obama came out and said no, at least for now, to the Keystone XL pipeline.
And the complaint was they weren't complaining enough, so he had to back off, so they started the pipeline in Oklahoma.
Make him do it. He said, make him do it. And for all of those Democrats who say, oh, shut up, we have to be nice, it's an election year, it's only helping Romney, BS. BS.
Okay. Sorry about that.
That's okay. Let me go to, I know, Dale. I hear you. Let me go to, this Mike in, can we wait? Oh, we got to wait a second? All right, hang on. We're going to go to Mike in Buffalo, New York, about a secret meeting to filibuster. Oh, yeah, that's this one. Mike in Buffalo. Hey, Mike, welcome to the Mike Malloy Show, sir.
Hi, Brad. How you doing?
I'm okay. How are you?
Good. Yeah, Brad, this is, I called my congressman, Chuck Schumer's office, and I told him they need to look into that. You think about it, that meeting on January 20th of 2009.
In case people don't know what this is, let me tell people what it was. And this has now come out. It came out in a book, and Newt Gingrich has confirmed it. On the night of the inauguration, Mitch McConnell, Newt Gingrich, a bunch of the leadership in the Republican Congress, they met on Inauguration Day in 2009 and said, we are going to do nothing but stop Obama from being reelected by saying no, no, no to every single one of his policies, no matter if it would help the country or not. It was all about destroying the economy to make sure that Obama would not be elected 4 years later, and they've now admitted to it. So, Mike, your point.
Yeah, you're exactly right. And to me, this is criminal. This is treason. Enough people need to start calling and make a big thing out of this, because if not, it's going to be like everything else. It's just going to be let go. And unfortunately, I'm worried. They're going to win. The money is overtaking everything in politics. And we're going to be stuck with Romney. And if we do, the middle class is done. He gets in, appoints two at least Supreme Court justices. And we're done. We really are.
I appreciate your call, Mike. I'd agree with you, but as everyone knows, I'm a Romney shill. Okay, we're going to get back to more of your calls in a moment. 877-520-1150. Yeah, Tom Hartman called it treason, and mediaite was just beside themselves. The Tom Hartman called it treason. Oh, get them a fainting couch. This is Brad Friedman on the Mike Malloy Show. 877-520-1150. Our final hour. Let's make it worthwhile. Somebody pick a fight with me. Oh, right-wingers, don't wait until the end to call. Call now.
The mountain is high, the valley is gone.
Welcome to the Promised Land, the Mike Malloy Show, here on your public airwaves. I'm Brad Friedman of bradblog.com. Our phone number is 877-520-1150. We're training in Phil in Tony's place here tonight. Just because you never know. Tony looks like he could get in trouble and he could be arrested, and you know, we wouldn't have anybody to run the show. So that's why you're hearing a little bit different music tonight on the final hour here. Let's go to your phones, 877-520-1150. Oh, it looks like I asked for a right winger, and it looks like we have one. Let's see what he has to say. His name is apparently Old Black Guy on the Right. So I'm going to assume that's a right winger. You know what's odd? Before I go to the Old Black Guy, what is it with these right wingers and they don't give their real name? Same thing on the internets. They're all pseudonymous, using fake names, very, very courageous. Welcome, Old Black Guy on the Right from Arizona. Welcome to the Mike Malloy Show, sir.
How you doing?
I'm okay. How are you?
I'm fine.
All right. What's your question tonight?
No, my statement is, you mentioned that the Koch brothers are funding all of this stuff.
Right.
We've had Tea Party events in my neighborhood, mm-hmm. and we've never had a Koch brother pass us a check.
Does the Americans for Prosperity sponsor that Tea Party?
No.
So whose Tea Party, which Tea Party group is this?
This is our local Tea Party in Mojave County,
right.
Arizona.
Right. So you guys are just You guys are just partying amongst yourselves. Is it?
That's correct.
Right. Okay. You're being used by these clowns. You're being lied to by these clowns. And as far as your funding goes, you could have your little whatever you want to call it, your cookie party if you want, and nobody would pay attention. But the fact is, the reason anybody pays attention to this is because it's being fueled by the Koch brothers' money, the Fox quote unquote news channel, who is, you know, believe me, there are plenty of people out there. Hang on, Old Black Guy on the Right. I'll give you a chance to respond. There are all kinds of people. There are all kinds of activists all over the country who are meeting, who have names to their little clubs as well, but nobody knows who they are. Why? Because they don't have billionaires funding them. So go ahead, Old Black Guy on the Right.
Okay, well, here's how it goes. We got together because, starting with my county,
yeah,
and my state,
yeah,
and the country are taxing us too much.
They're taxing you too much?
Oh yeah.
What, really? Arizona is taxing you too much?
Yeah, I believe they are.
Really? So, and you're moving then to? Who did you vote for in the election 2 years ago? The gubernatorial election.
I voted for the other guy. Wait a minute. 2 years ago?
Yeah, there was a race between
Jan
Brewer. Okay, so yeah. the governor who is taxing you too much, you voted to keep her in, right?
No, the state is taxing us too much. I know my local state, senator.
The state, the governor is Jan Brewer, the one you voted for, who's taxing you too much.
Well, the federal government is taxing me too much too.
Oh, they are, but Obama lowered your taxes, didn't he?
No, he did not.
Yeah, actually, he did.
No. Okay. What he did was he got rid of a tax
that would be lowering your taxes.
From Social Security, which means it's not being funded, which means it's going to come from someplace else.
Uh-huh.
He lowered down the line. It was 6.6, now it's 4.6.
So he lowered your taxes from 6.6 to 4.6, and you're still unhappy about it, right?
That's only on Social Security.
What? He lowered, did he lower your taxes?
It's minuscule.
Did you get a higher, it was not enough, but he lowered your taxes, right?
Technically, yes.
So Barack Obama lowered your taxes, and you're voting against him. And the woman
wants to get rid of the Bush tax cuts, which really lowered my taxes when they happened. Wants to get rid of them.
How much do you make? How much do you make each year?
I make about $75,000 a year.
Okay. He wants to keep your taxes at the same rate that George Bush had them.
No, No. Here's how it goes. I don't care what he's going to get rid of the taxes. Okay. He wants to cut down the Bush tax cuts. Yeah. And here's what's going
to
happen.
I got to go to a break, old black guy on the right. I'm sorry. You had a chance. You're voting against the guy who lowered your taxes. You're voting in favor of the woman who has taxes that are too high for you. And you're claiming the guy who lowered your taxes wants to raise them when he doesn't. Stop watching Fox News, old black guy on the right. It ain't helping you at all. Brad Friedman on the Mike Malloy Show. Stay tuned for more.
Well, they're building a gallows outside my cell, and I've got 25 minutes to go. And the whole town's waiting just to hear me yell. I got 24 minutes to go. Well, they gave me some beans for my last meal with 23 minutes to go. But nobody has.
That's about all we got. About 23 minutes. Here on the Mike Malloy Show, 877-520-1150. If you'd like to get in, Mike Malloy and Kathy Malloy will return on Monday. Never fear, their much-deserved vacation is almost to a close. Their loss, but your gain. So stay tuned for Live Mike Malloy next Monday night. Until then, you got me, Brad of bradblog.com. Taking your calls for the last few minutes we have here, 877-520-1150. A lot of you are on the line already. That last caller, the old black guy on the right from Arizona, as he chose to call himself, we were talking over the break. How these guys, you can give them all the facts you want. You can tell them that, yeah, Barack Obama lowered your taxes. Barack Obama wants to keep your taxes low. He wants to raise it only on millionaires and only on, the first dollar above 1 million. You can tell them that the governor that he hates because she has kept the taxes high, he voted for her. You can give all the facts you want, but here's the problem. When these folks go out and get into their car and they hear liars lying to them around the clock, whether it's Rush Limbaugh, Sean Hannity, whoever these right-wing loon liars are over our public airwaves, telling them these lies, oh, there's 180,000 non-citizens on the voting rolls in Florida. No, there isn't. But if Rush says it to you on the way to work, and if Sean tells you about it on the way home from work, and then you go home and you flip on, or flip off, as you should, the Fox News channel, and you watch their primetime lineup, and they tell you that there's 180,000 illegal citizens on the rolls in Florida, you begin to believe this stuff. And it's all done over our public airwaves. We had Sue Wilson on last night talking about how up in Wisconsin, leading up to the recall election, how the right-wing stations were having on Scott Walker and his supporters, in violation, by the way, of federal law and FCC rules, to the tune of $70,000 a day of free airtime compared to $400 a day for the Democrat. These are our public airwaves, people. This stuff matters. Pay attention to what's going on, because it's led to a nation of zombies, a nation of loons who you could tell the facts to day in and day out, and they just won't get it because, well, Rush told me something else. So I'm going to vote for the people who want to destroy me because Rush told me they love me. Oh, I mean, it's crazy. All right, never mind. Let's go to Lee in San Antonio, Texas. Howdy, Lee. Welcome to the Mike Malloy Show. What's up?
Yeah, I just wanted to make a couple of points because I've noticed that nobody ever seems to call in and make them.
All right, pick your best one because you got a bad phone, so I want to get your point, though.
Okay, well, mostly it's the fact that these people don't know anything about history. I mean, nobody talks about, FDR, and how he wanted the second Bill of Rights. Nobody talks about Kennedy and how he was talking about these people trying to take over the country from the shadows. I mean, nobody talks about that. It's like it's happened, but we want to forget it. And then people seem so surprised when we see these things popping up in the news where they're trying to, you know, do these little secret meetings and, you know, they're going to filibuster and all of these things. These things that, you know, past presidents already told the country. They already knew this was happening.
Oh, so you're talking about my comment, Lee, about the Koch brothers and their secret meetings and all of that? Is that what you're referring back to?
Right. I mean, it seems totally ludicrous to me that we will go out and expect, for example, for the automakers and, you know, the gas industry, the fossil fuels, to go ahead and say, you know what, we're going to take it, you know, help out with, you know, making electric cars and
right,
making everything cheaper. I mean, they have no intention ever, because that would be putting themselves out of business.
And I'm going to let you go, Lee, because it's a tough phone to hear. But listen, you're absolutely right. And this is something that I never understood. And I never understood about Democrats and progressives, who think that. And I think this is sort of the point you were making, is that, they're going to do the right thing, you know, if we convince them. No, the right thing for a corporation is to make money for their shareholders, period. Not only is it the right thing, it's their legal duty. It is their fiduciary duty. They don't have a responsibility to do the right thing. They don't have a responsibility to be nice, to be helpful, to hire Americans. They are not job creators. You people are the job creators. You're the job creators when you spend money, and so the company has to go out and hire more people. You know, the fiduciary duty of the corporations is to fire people, is to lay off people, is to become, you know, make their people so much more productive that they can make more money with less people. That's their job. That's how government is different than corporations. Do you right-wingers understand that at all? Yeah, probably doesn't matter. Gary in Minneapolis, Minnesota. Welcome to the Mike Malloy Show, Gary. What's on your mind, brother?
That guy that called in from Arizona, the black dude, he reminds me of what Norman Goldman says about Tea Party people. They're like, Tea Parties are little girls with imaginary friends.
yeah, that's kind of right. They do have imaginary friends, don't they? It is. It's just, I don't, these people, and some of them are, you know, they're lovely people. I know a lot of these people. I went out, if you go to Brad Blog or YouTube and search for Rise of the Tea Bags,
mm-hmm.
I went out there and I interviewed a whole bunch of these people when they were kicking off their Teabag Express tour a couple of years ago out here in L.A. And they're all really nice people. But the fact is they have been so misinformed and so disinformed and so played for stooges and pawns and lackeys by people who are using them. They don't even know up from down anymore. And it's really sad, frankly, because they're nice people. They're just being lied to. Anyway.
Yeah, if they just wake up a little bit, they might be on the right side of the equation.
And I think they are when they hear the right points. I mean, if you frame it and if you say, yeah, okay, you're against big government, then certainly you're against having the government come between a woman and her doctor as far as choice goes. Oh, you're against big government? Okay, then you agree that it's not the government's role to tell you who you can or can't marry. But, you know, but they're all lied to. So whatever is politically expedient for the Koch brothers is what they're going to. That's what the Koch brothers paid for, and they're getting it from these stooges. Anyway, go ahead.
Speaking of which, yeah. One of the reasons, basic reason I called is I read in the paper today that the senator, the Democratic Secretary of State, Mark Ritchie, is apparently not going to defend the law. They're trying to get a constitutional amendment on voter ID, and he's not going to defend it, I guess.
He's not going to defend it? You mean he's not going to fight against it, or he's not going to defend it on behalf of the state?
he's not going to not going to defend it on the part of the state, I guess, from
okay.
what I've been able to figure out.
Well, that makes sense, and I haven't talked to him. I speak with him usually via email or something from time to time. He's a great Secretary of State, actually. He's one of the few great Secretaries of State, so I haven't heard specifically what he was planning on doing, but if they pass that law, I suspect what he's saying is he probably won't enforce it as the Secretary of State, because I'm quite sure it is either unconstitutional or illegal. It's certainly immoral. It's against everything that this nation stands for, to keep legal voters from voting. It's appalling. And by the way, it shouldn't be up to him. It should be up to the Department of Justice and Eric Holder. Even though Minnesota is not one of the states covered by Section 5 of the Voting Rights Act, which requires covered states to get pre-clearance, in other words, mm-hmm. get permission from the Department of Justice, that only applies to about 16 or 17 states with a history of discrimination. But every state, all 50 states, cannot discriminate under Section 2, and that's exactly what these phony polling place photo ID restrictions are meant to do. They're meant to discriminate against Democrats, minorities, the elderly, and Eric Holder ought to be in every single state where these Republicans are passing these voter suppression bills and bringing lawsuits to stop them. And that includes Minnesota, and he should be up in Pennsylvania, and the fact that the DOJ is currently not doing this is to their endless shame, in my opinion.
And I also wanted to thank you for the black flag. I was the guy that sent you the email, and I did that because Sanchez got his flyer in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, so that's a shout-out to him.
There you go, Sanchez, and we're happy to help, Gary. I appreciate that. We'll talk to you soon, I hope, whenever they have us back again, if they have us back again. Tim from L.A. Oh, it's our old friend Tim. Hey, Tim, what's up, brother?
I'm all right, Brad. How are you?
I'm good. Welcome to the Mike Malloy Show. What do you have on your mind before I go to the break?
Okay, well, what I want to talk about is there are 1,000 students on the way right now to Japan to 4 prefectures in Iwate, Ibaraki, Miyagi, and Fukushima. And those 1,000 students are going to be out there to help the people of Japan, you know, the victims of the tsunami.
Right.
But according to Fukushima Diary, those places are irradiated.
Well, what are the students going out to do, Tim?
Well, according to the Japan Times, I think they're going to be supporting the people, helping the people, I guess, do cleanups or whatnot after the tsunami.
Right.
But, like I said, according to Fukushima Diary, four prefectures, Iwate, Ibaraki, Miyagi, and Fukushima, are 4 of 9 prefectures that are highly contaminated by radiation, like 8,000 becquerels per kilogram.
Right.
And I was talking to Psychoticus Chris from the chat room, and he said that I hope they have at least masks to protect themselves from the radiation.
Yeah.
Because we were doing research on those four cities, and their counts per minute is like a couple hundred, 200-300.
Tim, I got to get to a break. Is there a website you can give folks to read to learn more about this? FukushimaDiaries.com?
Yeah, Fukushima-Diary.com. And
Okay, Fukushima-Diaries.com. Thanks, Tim. Always good to hear from you, my friend. Keep up the good work and keep me on notice of what's going on out there in Fukushima. Brad in for Mike Malloy. One more segment straight ahead before we disappear into the night. Stay with us.
Manic depression is capturing my soul.
Let's say goodbye with a smile, dear, just for a while, dear, we must part. Don't let this parting upset you, I'll not forget you, sweetheart. We'll meet again, don't know where. Don't know when, but I know we-
So sad. So sad. We will meet again. My thanks tonight, of course, to engineer Tony Sorrentino, the greatest engineer in the room. Also, Phil Giangrande, the second greatest engineer in the room. I have to say that. Tony will never come back if I don't call him the greatest engineer in the room. Yeah, Phil is training in tonight, doing an excellent job. Thank you, Phil. Good to have you here, my friend. My thanks, as ever, to producer Desi Doyen and, of course, the super-duper associate producer, Margot Paez, who did producer duty this week as well, as Desi was doing the Young Turks, and we never got to ask Des. That's too late now. Des, watch for her on the Young Turks' The Point, which I think is released today or tonight, and we'll see if she said anything dumb. Also, my thanks to my guest, Rick Piltz. Thank you, sir. And to the folks in the chat room, all of them, every single one of them, for Earth and Dale, moderating in there for us tonight. And, of course, to the great Mike and Kathy Malloy for allowing me to sit in all week long. It has been a great week. Thank you guys for letting me sit here. And thanks mostly to the audience for tolerating me for a week. Never fear, Mike Malloy will return on Monday. And now it looks to me like all the people in the chat room have decided to call up and get on the line and say hello. Of course, we've only got about 2 minutes left for them to do that, but let's give them a shot. For Earth, who is there every night watching our backs for us in the bradblog.com chat room. Hey, Earthy. Welcome to the Mike Malloy Show.
Hey, I just got a couple of quick things.
All right.
Number one, I want to thank you and Des and Margo for sitting in for Mike. I'm a real Malloyalist, and I just love it when occasionally you come in and sit. And it's been a great week, and thanks so much. You've enlightened us all.
You're very kind. Thank you.
And the other thing I wanted to say is, you know, the old black guy
on the right. Yeah.
Yeah, you know, he's a really nice man. He's been in the chat room all week, and he's been very polite, so nobody booted him out.
Good.
But he needs to learn, and so do a lot of other people, that we people don't just accept what we hear on the radio. We lefties, when you tell us something, Brad, we make you give us your sources. We go and check them out.
Good.
We talk to each other.
Yep.
We don't just believe what we hear on the radio, and people on the right don't do that. They just listen mindlessly to these people.
You're right.
We check you guys out, and if you're wrong, somebody calls you up and says, hey, you screwed up here.
That's right. Hold my feet to the fire. Make me prove it. Earthy, I have to let you go only because I want to get to your other chat room pals who have called in as well.
Okay, we love you.
I love you back. Thanks for all you did this week and always when we're doing the Mike Malloy Show. Really appreciate it. Let's go to, here we go, Bill O. in Cleveland, Ohio. Bill O. writes, man, for Earthy took up all your time, so you only got about 30 seconds. What's up, Bill O. writes, man?
All I need is 30 seconds. Hey, shout out to chat room. Ooh. Hey. So, you know, Brad, all week we've been talking about everything that relates to election protection. And in, you know, 2006, 2008, we had Jennifer Bruner and a lady in California, and we were making some progress. But in 2010, everything just hit the wall, and it seems like, you know, ballots are no longer public record that you can get a Freedom of Information
Act. At least not in the state of Colorado. That you can't
crazy.
Look. It is crazy.
So, all week we've heard all this, and it's all on Brad's website, bradblog.com. Where do we go from here, Brad? We're losing ground. We were making big advancements.
Listen, Bill O, one step forward, two steps back. Sometimes you keep up the fight. You keep fighting for what's right. You do your best. It's getting hard. It's getting harder and harder and harder. But you have to keep up the fight. For those people who turn away and they say, well, a pox on both their houses. I hate the Democrats. I hate the Republicans. Fine. Go vote for a Libertarian. Go vote for a Green Party. But keep up the fight.
The laws and the people running it, all this is being stacked up more.
I hear you, brother. And I got to go. I got to go because I got to get to these other callers if possible. But you know what, Bill O? Run for office. Not kidding. Stephen in Burbank, go. You got 10 seconds, brother.
Hi, Brad, as much as it behooves us, we must give credit where credit is due. Barack Obama, President Obama, did the right thing today. He did something that makes sense. Education will help promote the betterment of humanity. And we can get them to do other things, too, but education is the key. And maybe down to 2.5 seconds.
All right, Stephen, you did very well. Thank you, sir. I appreciate that. And our final caller of the evening, my old friend Randall from Tempe, Arizona. You have 10 seconds. Do it, Randall.
Brad, we're not worthy. Bill of Rights, man, don't give up. The winner is the last one to give up. Mojave County is white supremacist capital of Arizona. It's like a cesspool out there. And, David Cobb is on a nationwide barnstorming tour for a movetoamend.com. Movetoamend.com.
Well done, Randall. I got to run. I love you. I love you all. Thanks for having me. Who knows when I'll see you. Until then, I'll see you at bradblog.com. Keep it lit, America.